Hello, welcome to the Longshot Leaders Podcast. I'm Michael Stein. My guest today is Mitch Hankins. Mitch is a cloud-certified full-stack developer who speaks to professionals struggling to find meaning in life. He created a cause celeb called Debug Life in the same fashion that he would figure out an algorithm. He figured out how to help people in this way. He's worked with the NASDAQ and U.S. military and many other companies and helped them with algorithmic situations, so to speak. So we kind of get into a conversation about the meaning of life and how he's helped other people and, you know, how he came across this in his own situation. Just a fun little conversation. Here is Mitch Hankins. All right. I'm here with Mitch Hankins. We were just talking in the pregame. You know, my grandmother's maiden name was Hankin. I was like, wonder if he's Jewish, but he's German, and we were all in that area, you know, or Netherlands. So that segues into the Netherlands. I want to go back. That's where you were born. You were there because your dad was in the Air Force.
Yeah, that's right. He actually was born and raised in Mississippi. So I got some of that influence as well, but he moved out to the Netherlands when he was about 20 years old. He got stationed there by the Air Force. And that's where he met my mom. And after that, he didn't want to leave. And they had a couple of kids. And, you know, I was the last one. And I was born and raised there. So I lived there for the first 20 years of my life.
And then you went in the Air Force.
Yeah, I went the other way. I followed in my dad's footsteps, but instead of going from the U.S. to the Netherlands, I went the other way. So yeah, while I lived in the Netherlands, we had to drive out all the way to Germany because that was the closest base for enlistment. And after about a year in a holding pattern with that, they shipped me straight out to Texas for basic training. And I've been in the U.S. ever since.
Is that what you wanted to do when you were a kid? You're like, I want to be in the military like dad?
A little bit. You know, mostly it was for me a really solid way to get started in the U.S. because I had some family here. So growing up, like I knew I could move in with family, but I didn't know how the education system worked. You know, I didn't know how any of the systems work, because that's, of course, very different in Europe. So it just made sense to me to join the military and kind of get my get grounded that way and then just figure out my next steps from there.
What'd you do from there? When you got done with the military, what'd you get into?
I got into computer science. So I became a programmer. That's something that some people might have predicted when I was younger, because I was always tinkering with computers. But I think a lot more people were expecting me to do something that didn't really require sitting still too much, because I wasn't that great at sitting still as a kid and paying attention. So I think that surprises a lot of people. But, you know, while I was in the Air Force, they were, of course, you know, one of their programs was paying for a degree. And so I was like, well, this is too good to pass up. And one of the programs that really resonated with me was computer science. And I kind of loved all those courses. I loved learning about computers. I loved learning about programming languages. And honestly, 99% of the skills I use on the job nowadays are self-taught. Like I dropped out, I think probably halfway through the degree or so, because I got hired on by NASDAQ. And, you know, balancing like working full-time for NASDAQ as well as going to school online full-time was just really too much. And so I dropped out of my degree and just continued to educate myself. And that's kind of where I got all my skills from.
You know, working for NASDAQ, I want to know what that entails. All I know about is NASDAQ is that I got like, you know, I put a lot of stock into NASDAQ because notoriously over the past like 50 years, they've made like about 10%. Not a bad deal. What do you do at NASDAQ? What's that company all about when you work for them? I didn't even know it was a real kind. I thought it was like just a composite of a bunch of mutual funds, mm-hmm. like tech mutual funds.
So the NASDAQ does have an index fund for tech, but they essentially facilitate a lot of the trading. So, for example, you have the NYSE, the New York Stock Exchange, and then you have the NASDAQ, and several countries have their own, like Japan has their own. Of course, Amsterdam has their own. So there's all these different companies that kind of do it, but it's essentially facilitating the trades, you know, all the things that have to do with like complying with financial regulations and such, because, of course, that's incredibly complex. So these companies are essentially just markets where people can trade, you know, all these different financial products. So, you know, people at NASDAQ can do anything from sales to support to, you know, the programmers working on things like the code that actually does the trades, all the way up to, you know, the product that I worked on was around risk management, which was for bigger banks to kind of get an insight into the exposure, as we call it, to certain risky assets and for them to be able to monitor that.
That's a bit, how did you, you were, how did you get approached? Did they approach you? Did you say, I want to get out of college, I want to approach them? How did you get hooked up with that company?
Yeah, it was actually super serendipitous. I did get, I wouldn't say headhunted. I got contacted, but it wasn't because I'd done anything special. Like it wasn't because I had launched some like awesome project that had gotten me attention. I just received a call from a recruiter one day and they said, hey, we've got this job opportunity and we can't tell you who it is. But if you want it, you have to show up at this location at this time in this building. And I'm just like, well, that's weird. You know, of course I Googled the address and all I saw was like this Wells Fargo building. So I'm like, what is this like for Wells Fargo or something? Like what is this about? But it was just a regular storefront. And so, you know, on the day of my interview, when I got there, I got out of the elevator and I saw like these opaque glass windows with the NASDAQ symbol on them. And I'm like, well, I wonder if this is for NASDAQ or if this is just like some shared interview. And I didn't really find out that I was interviewing for NASDAQ until I walked into the conference room and was introduced to my future manager there. And that's really the first time I found out that job was for NASDAQ.
I mean, you must've been pretty good or smart, or I mean, the recruiter said this would be a good fit. I mean, you must've had a modicum amount of expertise for this, right?
Well, I know I was really passionate. You know, I had definitely, there's some things you can do to stand out as a software developer. Like you can have like some pet projects going, you can have like your own website where you explain certain things. And I did have that, but I don't feel, you know, even looking back, I don't feel like I was doing it in a spectacular way or way better than most people were doing it. I don't think I had a particularly good resume, even though, you know, I don't think that's the first thing people look at. I just think, I don't know exactly what happened. I know it made a really good impression during my interview just because I was so passionate about the project.
Is it like as glamour? I mean, it's a pretty good job, isn't it, working for a company like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a Fortune 500 company. So it's definitely, it definitely had a little bit of the glamorous aspect. And
did it really kind of move the needle for you financially?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I'd never made that much money in my life. I think I got paid in a month what I used to get paid in an entire year for the military.
Okay. So the reason why I'm asking this is because that's a pretty big change. How old were you?
At the time I was probably 25 or so.
Okay. So you're still a young guy and it's a compliment. It's a big move. It's a financial shift there. I mean, you start working for them, you're pretty much thinking, hey, I'm 25 years old. I'm going to got a lot of money now compared to, you know, probably thinking it's nice to know there's a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. Mm-hmm. This is it, right? I feel like this is, you know, this is going to be the answer to all my problems right here. Right. So, you know where we're getting at. So, so where does your journey take you? How long did you work there for?
So I worked at NASDAQ for about 2 years. I actually tried quitting 3 times, but every time I was offered a promotion.
Yeah. So, why'd you try to quit?
Well, the first time was because I felt like a cog in a machine. You know, things just weren't moving along. It's what you get with these bigger companies.
But you didn't feel like that in the beginning. When did that start to, I'm getting at somewhere here. When you started to feel like you were the cog in the machine, when did that start out? Because you couldn't have felt like that in the beginning. You might have been like, holy shit, this is really cool. Because that's what you did.
Right.
When did that start to kind of go? Happen?
I would say that started about like 4 or 5 months in. Mm. Just because everything was so, I don't know if the right word is red tape, but everything was so difficult. Like we weren't getting the progress that I needed. Like I'm someone that if I go into work and I want to get something done, and by the time I leave, I want to be like, okay, I got this done today. Like I don't want to have to think to myself, okay, this got postponed or we didn't get this done. Like for me, that's very frustrating. So it just built up over all those months because things just weren't getting done. There weren't any change. I wasn't having an impact. And that built up pretty quick.
So you try to quit 3 times. They give you raises, you know, and after on that last pass, so to speak, you're like, I don't care what did you hit zenith at that point? You're like, I don't care what it is.
Yeah.
I got to get out.
I definitely did. I mean, at this point I was making about double the money I was when I got started with them. And, you know, but there were just some days where I was just so overwhelmed that I would just find a place to isolate myself, whether it was like a nearby park or there was a nearby gym I would go to a lot and just kind of like, just wanted to scream. I would just go nuts. I was like, I cannot do this anymore. And at that point, so this was in Denver, and I had a friend who's director of business development at the company I work for now. And they were looking for a programmer, and it was all remote. It was, they did want someone to move to San Diego because they wanted to have someone in the area just in case they want to have meetings and such. And it seemed to be a really good fit. So he introduced me to his leadership. And after I met them and after they'd given me a contract, I was done. Like, that was the zenith for me. I was like, I can't go back to NASDAQ now. I can't stay here.
What'd you do after that?
Well, after that, I just very quickly packed my things. And I think about a week later, I moved out to San Diego.
Why San Diego?
So it's very random, but only because a lot of people were telling me that I would like it. Like, I've been a traveler for most of my life. You know, again, lived in 2 countries, lived in 14 or 7 states, I think, and maybe even more in a bunch of different cities. And Denver was recommended to me. I'd never been there before. I moved there out of the blue for school after the military, and I loved it. And people that knew me really well said, you know what? We think you would absolutely love San Diego.
Yeah, what's not to love? It's the ocean. But you didn't know anybody out there, did you?
No one. No one at all, yeah.
So you leave your job. Is this the RV? Is it time to get the RV yet or not yet? We're not at the RV yet, are we?
No, that comes after.
Okay,
yeah.
Okay. All right. So you see, I'm trying to like, see, you know, 27, 28 years old.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So you go to San Diego, you don't have a job, but you're confident with your talents of what you can do at this point. What do you do when you get there, and are you planning to get a job, or what's going on with you?
So at this point, when I moved to San Diego, I had the job lined up from my friend who lived in Denver.
Uh-huh.
And I was going to start that, I think, about a week. I moved around the March area, and I was going to start that about a week after I moved. So when I got to San Diego, I'd already arranged a rental that I paid for everything, like without ever having seen it.
Yeah.
And the landlord just showed it over FaceTime, and it ended up being perfect. It was in like a beautiful area in North Park. It's just beautiful, beautiful little house. And I love being there for the time that I spent there. And the first week, all I did was just get it furnished and get settled. And then after that week is when I got started.
You started working at this other company?
Yes. Yes.
Where was that?
So it was a smaller company. It's called 4IQ Solutions, or Earth Now. And it's essentially ticket management software has to do with a lot of damage prevention. You know, when there's people like digging for gas lines and such, things can go pretty bad when you hit like a gas line with an excavator, and you know, things blow up and people may lose their lives. So essentially our software is around managing that risk. And that's the work I started on with the new company. And the first project I worked on was kind of like this huge project that had to deal with integrating all these different services together, which was pretty intimidating to start with, but it all went really well. And after that, it was all just smooth sailing.
How long were you there for?
So I still work for that company. That's been about almost 4 years ago.
So why debug life? What really spawned you to like to do that? Was it the experience where you said, you know, when do you really hit like the nadir? We talked about the zenith of one point. Where's the nadir, the low point where you're like, something's not right? I mean, is there a moment where you had that? I know it was kind of gradual, you know, because I heard your story, but you know, why you created that. But you know, everybody has that. Mm-hmm. And you seem to me also, not that you can't stay at one place, but you're used to traveling. So you're like, you can go anywhere. You're a programmer. You're like Kane from Kung Fu, which I always reference. You could go, you could do your job, you know, in like Barcelona if you wanted to.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, when did you come up with debug? Was that all about? That.
I mean, so, you know, a lot of it was gradual, but there definitely was that low point where I knew I had to make a change. You know, the whole time at NASDAQ, I just wasn't happy. I was getting more money. I thought that would make me happier. And then every time I got more money, I wasn't getting happier. And then even working for my new company, you know, I had all these financial goals I set, all these investment goals I set when it came to the stock market, real estate, savings, all these different things. And I was hitting them. I even began trading like complex financial products like options and was making really good money doing that. And the more money I was pulling in and the higher goals I was setting, I just realized like, okay, something's missing. And I was getting more and more freedom with the company I work for now, you know, working remotely, deciding what projects I want to work on and all these different things. And I still said, you know, there's still this voice in my head that said like something isn't completely right. And at the time, I thought it was because I was still renting and I had just read Robert Kiyosaki's Rich Dad Poor Dad. And I'm like, okay, I got to buy a house. Like that's what my body's telling me. And I started doing all these financial analysis sheets on properties in San Diego, and I just couldn't get the math to work. So I decided to move out to Columbus, Ohio, because the growth rate looks good. You know, the numbers there look good. A lot of young people moving there, good incomes, all these different things. And I found a good deal. So I bought a duplex there, moved all the way from San Diego to Columbus, had my tenants essentially there paying the rent for me. So I was living completely rent-free. And, you know, even though after I lived there for about 9 months, and even though after the first few months, I did end up making really good friends, I would say the first few months is really where I realized like, okay, like this wasn't the right move. One of the first nights I got there, I remember sitting in the living room with my back against the wall, and I didn't really have any furniture yet. So the place was empty. And every time I closed my eyes, I could feel myself bobbing like up and down in the ocean because I surfed a lot at the time. And so every time I closed my eyes, for some reason, I could feel myself like rising and falling with the ocean. And that was a very low point where I got really, really sad and I cried and I thought, you know, this just isn't right. And at that point, I knew that I had to make it back to San Diego, but I also knew that I needed to take a more spiritual path in life, that just making more money and just getting financial independence, even if I could retire early, wasn't going to make me happy. Like I was just chasing after things that would only lead to the next chase.
This is the meat of the story right here. I'll tell you why. Yeah. Because if I could be pontifical about that, everybody that has, you have some success and then you're like, I should do this. Or I think I should do this now because this is kind of feels like what I should do. I had a successful run. I was a nightclub promoter. And I said, you know what? This is all cash business. I should become a real estate agent. Mm-hmm. I don't understand. I was like, you know, like went from a mini celebrity, you know, and I said, I'm going to try to do that. So I stopped doing that. This was before I said, I'm still going to be an actor and a filmmaker. You sit there and you make these decisions, you know, and then you make that decision. And you're sitting in that situation. Now there's nothing to knock like Columbus. I've been to it's college town. Great. You know, but knowing what you, the small amount of time I've known you and knowing like, you know, you're sitting at, you know, this place in San Diego, and then you push yourself like into this, like, you know, duplex in like Columbus, Ohio, you must have think like, why the hell did I do this? You know, it's like, I'm sitting here. It's like, you know, and God, the winters are so depressing. So, you know, compared to, you know, in San Diego, look it up. They have the most steadiest weather on the planet Earth, you know, like at anywhere, like in that latitude and longitude, there's like the most steadiest weather. It's like 72 degrees. Like you can walk out there naked. You don't know you're out there. So it's
at midnight. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's always perfect. So that's why Ron Burgundy was like the newscaster, weatherman. So, you know, that's why you made debug life.
Yes.
Everybody has this thing. Can you take us through some bullet points now that you've created this? What are some bullet points that you help, like when you talk to people, do you actually go out, what does this look like? But what are some of the bullet points, key points of, you know, evaluating this or debug life or what it's all about?
Yeah, I love that. So, you know, the thing that I focus on most is really personal life. Like I think a lot of people talk about, you know, in a sense of work-life balance, a lot of people talk about work, about how to find the perfect job and all these different things. For me, it's really taking a step back and seeing work as a part of your entire life. So setting a vision for life, finding out your core values, creating a 3-year plan, creating a monthly plan. So breaking it down and keep breaking it down until it's smaller and smaller. I really learned that from, this software paradigm or this paradigm that's used in software law called iteration, which is where, each iteration you get a little bit better. And so the way I do that is I look at, well, what's like someone's like 3 or 5 year plan and how does it fit in with their core values? And then what kind of 1 year plan can you set in order to get closer to that 3 or 5 year plan? And then that 1 year plan, you break down into monthly goals. And those monthly goals, you break down into weekly goals. And those weekly goals, you break down into daily actions. And in that way, it's really about taking charge of life and getting really curious about what it is you truly want. You know, a lot of the times we're kind of more, I would say, concerned with society tells us to like, nice houses, big pay raise, nice cars, all these different things. And the whole process that I typically go through with people is, what is it really that you want? Like, what is the inner voice telling you that's important to you? And most importantly, along with that comes the right community. So having the right people around you that support your ideas, that encourage you, that don't, that don't try and hold you back out of, either fear of their own inadequacy or trying to protect you somehow, like loving parents can do, for example. So really the process that I help people through is getting curious about themselves and being able to plan their personal lives to accommodate their work lives.
This is so good. This is good stuff. Now we're really, we're starting to hit pay dirt here, because when I do every podcast, I'll finish up with somebody and say, what's on your 3 to 5 to 10, plan? Do you plan out that far in advance? I do, yes. And then you work your way back. That's a personal development thing, and it's also apparently now, hey, I understand that it's kind of like a software kind of thing, so to speak. Yeah. Right. So that's interesting, because usually, that forces you to say, look, what's the objective? What's the end game here?
Yes.
What's really going to fulfill me? Now some people might be listening and say, sometimes you just need to make money and take care. I understand that. I get it, but a lot of times if you have the inertia of passion behind your cause, behind what you're doing, then you're going to be more productive. You're going to be more, those financial goals are going to come to fruition depending on, how limited your lane is. There's a lot of things to get in there, but this is really, this trite and simple, thought process is actually a paradigm shift that really makes a huge difference.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I always think of why is the emotion behind things, and emotion stands for energy in motion. Like having a why, knowing why you're doing something and being clear on it, having it written down gives you the energy to actually implement it. And it is so important to have that, because unless you don't, you are not going to, or you're unlikely to succeed. If you want to lose weight, it's like, well, why do you want to lose weight? Because if you don't know, or if you're doing it for some kind of extrinsic motivation, like, validation, or because that society is telling you to do, you're just going to yo-yo diet. But if you have a very clear why, around like why you want a promotion, why you want to start a certain business, like why you want to help people, then you're going to have the energy the energy in motion to actually keep going, especially when the going gets rough.
Yeah. And that's also a personal development aspect. A lot of these are universal, but to put more energy behind it, it's critical thinking also. It's interesting, because in your line of work, critical thinking is like a must, but mm-hmm. Asking sorry if I sound like a broken record to some of these people, but the who, what, where, why, when, and how, and then Toyota that 5 times for each.
Yes.
Toyota is the why. Toyota's famous for saying, why is that? Why is that? Why? But take all those, and then Toyota that, if I could give it that moniker, and then you really, why not do that with your life? And why don't we once in a while say, why don't they teach you this in fucking school?
I couldn't agree more. I could not agree more. It's so silly that we don't do that, because I don't know if you've ever had really just random like older people that you meet and ask them like about what they wish they'd done differently in life, or kind of like what their advice would be. And it always comes down to some version of, I have regrets about something. I wish I had just done it. And we keep putting off all of these things that we actually want to be doing because we think they're silly or they're childish or they don't mean anything, or that we have to be big grown up, adults and be productive in society. But, you know, then what happens when you're laying on your deathbed? There's so many people, I think, that just kind of repress all these different things that they know they should be doing, out of fear for either failure or embarrassment. But it's going to feel a hell lot worse when you're laying on your deathbed and you haven't done the things that you actually really want to do, the things that are really important to you. And getting curious about that is just so important.
I agree. Yeah. Play out that end game, and then as a movie, and then pull back on saying, what can I execute now towards that? And then there's the funny line from the movie Cocoon. Was it Wilford Brimley? He's like, what would you do if you could do different? He's like, take better care of my teeth. Anyways, that has nothing to do with anything. Where are you at today? I want to know, what's going on? What are you doing in your career, in your life right now?
So now I've launched the Debug Life. What I'm doing is coaching for essentially any kind of engineer or people who feel that they don't have that balance that we've been talking about, like people that are very career driven, very accomplished, but just don't have either, the personal life or the community around them that they're really craving. So what I do now is I blog a lot and I speak about kind of the things that I've done to make these changes in my life and inspire people to do the same, as well as take people through coaching programs to help them make that transformation. And that's kind of what I see myself doing for the longer term right now, just because that's really something I love helping people with. That's something I'm really passionate about because it's something that helped me back for so many years and it caused me so much pain that it's very meaningful work for me right now. And what comes after that, I'm not quite sure, but I love doing what I'm doing now.
Well, I got to ask you, this is part of your, part of what you mentioned. And this is what I always ask everybody, because I'm a curious bastard. Like I said, what's on your 3 to 5 to 10? What's the 30,000 foot view of, where you plan out that far ahead? Do you have anything, what's on the horizon?
I love that. Yeah. So for me, I personally set a 3-year vision. And for me, the 3-year vision is coaching. So it's being able to travel over the world while I coach people. So I want to be able to work, essentially from a different country, I would say like every few months or so. And I see myself exploring nature on every square inch of the planet. Like that's something I'm very passionate about. So going hiking, surfing, all these different things in all different areas of the planet, and simultaneously coaching people to, make the transformation that we've been talking about this whole time. And after that, I have some additional plans as well, such as one of the things I would really love to do is, going back to the school subject you mentioned where we don't get taught certain things, is I really want to start, I don't know exactly how yet, but I really want to start my own education facilities where especially troubled youth gets the education that's really lacking in modern schools. So how to job interview, how to do your taxes, how to be emotionally intelligent, all these different things that we aren't really taught. That's for me, from my 3 to 5 year plan. And that's kind of come after the coaching, but yeah.
That's a wonderful, yeah. I like the yin and the yang on the outdoor and the computer, analytical way to break down, how you're coaching.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. That's a common thread throughout all my program, because, it's something that resonates with the people that I talk to, and it just makes sense to the right person.
I say it all the time, people are like a thumbprint, right? So I don't know, until I start talking to somebody, I was like, okay, so this guy's got a unique thumbprint. I didn't know what it was. I was like, what's happening here? Cause I understand what he's talking about. Now I get it. And it's interesting, everybody's original. There's no competition in stand-up comedy. There's no competition in what you're trying to do in the world.
Right.
And very interesting. And because you can be, fancy word, peripatetic, you can be jump around from place to place. You don't have to be at one, even though now I see that you got a very nice, very wonderful decor, by the way, in this place in San Diego. You're not opposed to settling down somewhere. It's just the right place, I guess.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Of course I have all this written out for my 3-year plan in quite great detail, but the idea is to be settled down in San Diego and travel from here. So Yes, take like a whole month and spend it in Mexico. And, you know, it might be like a surfing trip. And while I do that, do coaching. And then the next month, you know, go to a different place. And but always have my home base in San Diego. I think that's where it's always going to be.
That's a nice button right there. I like it. Sounds good to me.
Yeah.
Mitch, thank you so much for sharing your story. It's intriguing. And you seem like, you know, Mr. Miyagi, you got it all figured out.
I tried to. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. That was software engineer extraordinaire and meaning of life hacker, Mitch Hankins. Here's a little quote for him. Life has no meaning. Each of us has meaning and we bring it to life. It is a waste to be asking the question when we are the answer. Joseph Campbell. Thank you for joining us. And I look forward to hanging out with you all on the next episode. All right. Have you guys been to longshotleaders.com? That's where you can check out all of the guests and the bios and the backgrounds and more. Also, if you haven't done so already, subscribe to the podcast on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what we do, give us a good rating. Tell your family and friends to come by and listen. It's going to make you feel nice and toasty inside. Every week we'll be delivering knowledge, creativity, inspiration, exasperation, perspiration. If it ends with a shun, basically you're going to find it here. All right. Thank you for joining us. And in the great words of Bill Murray in the movie Caddyshack, friends for life, I say.